Welcome to the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast, intended to equip and encourage business owners and aspiring entrepreneurs. Taught by active business owner, best-selling author, and teacher, Sean Castrina.
All right, Sean Castrina with the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast. You know I'm excited because I'm always excited, but I'm especially excited when I have a founder and I have somebody fantastic. Listen to this. Diane Prince, she's the founder of OnStaff, bootstrapped it in 6 years up to $50 million and then exited it to a public company. Let me say that again, 6 years, $50 million, bootstrapped, exit, public company. That's all you needed to hear. Diane, it's great to have you on the podcast.
Thanks, Sean. Glad to be here.
All right. So I always like to start out with, how did you end up being an entrepreneur in the first place? Was that always the case, or was there a transition to it? How did you become an entrepreneur?
I got a master's degree in French literature, and the next step would be naturally to go onto the PhD program. I was terrible in academia. And when it was my time to actually have gone through the exam, I had to read like 180 books in French and explain the text. I sucked at it. And there was like that, always that legendary person who failed the master's exam, which was like, you know, someone had failed like 7 years prior. So after I took the exam, in which, by the way, that was the most stressful thing I've ever done besides like running several $8 million companies. And I got a call from the chair of the French department who said, "We think you're probably better suited towards business."
and you know what? They were right.
They were right. It broke my heart, but it turns out that yes, Professor Cao at UCLA they were right.
That it is funny how the roads go many different ways, but when you end up as an entrepreneur, when you're in your zone, I always said you wonder how you could have done anything else as well as this anyway.
Yes.
Because it scratches all the itches.
Yes.
So tell me about your first startup. Because if your first startup is the one we're talking about, kudos and I bow three times. But I'm, because that's incredible, those odds. But tell me about your first, you know, how you segued into like your first venture, decide you want to be an entrepreneur, you want to get into business. Tell me how you get to your first startup. And then if that is this company we're getting ready to talk about, you know, the big exit, kind of tell me how the journey went.
The first startup was that company.
Now you're just showing off, Diane.
So you'll hear entrepreneurs, and I am on a mission to take the bullshit out of entrepreneurship. You'll hear all these stories or fluff or how you should do things. And one of them is that you should, you know, follow your passion.
Oh, wait. Oh, I got to pause. This is why we do video. I am the biggest non-proponent of that. I'm trying to find the right English to that. I got my 12-year-old vocabulary. Passion is an entrepreneur's mistress. Just because I love golf doesn't mean I buy a driving range or buy a golf course. Yes. I pursue profitable ideas.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. So I started this business with my ex-husband. We were married at the time. We were in our mid-20s. And our why, I do believe though, and I know that is as
I love the why. No, the why's got to be huge.
Yes. Yes. And so our why was to retire and hang out together and work together. And we thought, well, let's, and we went into it with the goal of building a business that we would sell to a strategic partner in less than 10 years. So we set out to do that.
And you did it in spades. Why that company? So what was on staff? Was there a background in this type of business? How did you come up with that idea, that company? Why that company? Why that idea?
Well, we knew that we wanted to make millions, that we had to find a business idea that would make millions. So it was super, the niche was very specific and it was a temporary staffing agency specifically for the people who wrote title insurance policies.
You're kidding. That's like a needle in the needle of the haystack.
So I had, through college and graduate school, I had temped as receptionist, secretary, and my father had spent his entire career at Chicago Title Insurance. When I was a kid, I went to the American Land Title Association conferences with him. And besides being in really fancy hotels, I was like, please kill me if I ever do this for a living.
Don't they spend half their time in courthouses looking up titles? Now, they obviously may do it differently now because of online, but it's massive title searches, very due diligence.
Yes. Back then, the jobs were like document puller. Our first office was actually in the title insurance plant. They had microfiche, they had word processors, proofreaders. And if you can imagine $50 million in revenue based on some of these positions paid at that time, minimum wage was $8 an hour. So we had thousands of people doing this work. But the point is though, it was really good timing. So it was a specific niche and it was new to the, because of, and I won't get into all the details, but because of how we started in Southern California, the amount of real estate transactions, the way that title insurance companies managed their workforce through hiring and layoffs, like routine layoffs. So
Your due diligence. No, what you did. Well, I like the one thing though, you kind of lay that out there. We just wanted something that would make millions. And that does change the change is what you go into, but you went into something you had a general idea about.
Yes.
And I tell people that I don't know a lot about any of the industries I'm in, but I have a couple unique skills within business. Like I can make a phone ring. I know how to create traffic, that's a nice skill to have. That's one of the three fundamentals of business. But you went into something you had a general idea about, and you're right about that. You can't just yank somebody off the street and do that. So there, you know, that's a pretty sharp person. You have to have very detailed. So I could see where somebody like a title company hiring you, how valuable that could be, because I don't think you can just yank anybody off the street as a temp to do that.
Well, they were, and they were doing that. And at the time, my ex-husband, who was my partner, he had gotten a job at a title company, and they were doing that, and it wasn't working. And then what was happening too is when people got laid off from the industry, they'd go into something else. So the industry was losing all this talent. We didn't know all this though when we started the company. It sounded like a good idea. My dad thought it was a good idea, and so we just ran with it. I mean, we had no, like, I didn't even know anything about employment. Benefits or costs, or all of a sudden we're like, wait a minute, you mean we're not making double this? We have to pay tax, like,
yeah, the old taxes. That is so funny. When did you know though? You know, I always say there's a point early on where you get an opportunity you never saw coming, and there's an obstacle you never saw coming. Early on, like, what opportunity, like, was there an opportunity you saw that was like, okay, that could take this thing to the different level? Was there an obstacle you never saw coming that was bigger than you could imagine, or both?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, the opportunity we never saw coming is, I don't know. I don't think that we knew what magnitude we could grow this to, being such a specific and small niche. So I think the opportunity was really, I'm a big fan of monetizing early. So
I love that.
Yeah. So like once we started, you know, once the money started coming in, it was like, oh my gosh, you know, there's no feeling like that validation, and that no survey or, you know, free beta can get you.
I call it the law of profit. Don't tell me about your culture. Don't tell me about how great your customers are, how much you love them, how great your product is. All I want to know is, how much money did you make last month?
Yes. And the obstacle, I would say we were a couple of kids managing a lot of people, and that was not easy.
Yeah. No, I love it. I always say sometimes if we knew how hard it was going to be going in, we may not have done it. So it's good that we kind of discovered it without knowing it.
Yes.
So how cool does it feel like to sell a company, like to be able to have the big, I mean, some people have an exit, but they get out, you know, with a little bit of oxygen and a year of money. Little bit different. I mean, when you exit to a public company, things have gone fairly well in your direction.
Oh God, it felt so good. It was, and it took, the deal was, you know, they, our accountant had told us the deal will fall through. He said something like five to seven times before it closes. It'll fall apart. And it did. And it fell apart and came back together. And I, my, my job during that 10 months it took to close the deal was just working on the deal. And when it finally closed, and it was, we ended up with about $10 million in cash in our account.
You've littered a couple things in there. I love how you littered. I'm not very, not an academia, but master's degree. And then she said, $10 million in my account.
It felt so good. It was pretty crazy.
I would just go to the ATM machine. The old days when I used to go to the ATM machine just to see what was in my bank account because I grew up poor. I would literally take a daily trip to that or go online every day just to look at it.
Yes. Well, we made a few too many withdrawals. That's another story.
I've heard those stories.
That's for one of the books.
Oh, that's incredible. So you get all this money. And what is the next? So what do you do after that? You do your little spending, you do whatever again. Cause I would think a lot of times you're like, we can do this again. Like, yeah. Okay, we did it once. So what was next?
Well, I spent most of my 30s retired. So I was 33 when we did that. I found out when we had the limousine was waiting for us for our party to celebrate. And I, for some reason, decided that was a good time to do a pregnancy test. Oh. Literally found out I was pregnant with my third daughter the night of the party. So you raise kids. I had such a different perspective then in my 30s, being a young mom who had sold a business than a lot of the other parents in the school. I mean, I read a lot of novels. I worked out a lot. I surfed. And it was interesting too, because, they'd be like, well, what does your husband do all day? Cause he was retired too. And I'm like, well, what do you do all day?
Yeah. We do whatever we want. The answer is whatever we want.
Yes. But it was a great feeling. I enjoyed it. And I had a completely different perspective of all like the people who think they're so busy. Cause I'm like, well, I know what it's like to be really busy. And I really, really appreciated that time and enjoyed the freedom that I had.
So how do you get back into the game or to where you're at? Tell me where you're at now. What's the next hill to climb? What's the hills in between you've climbed? Just kind of give me an update.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of hills, Sean, and divorce and losing money. And, there were a lot of different struggles that came. And I like to say I made millions in my 20s, spent my 30s retired, learned a lot of lessons in my 40s. And now I am teaching other people how to do, now I'm on a mission to make entrepreneurship more straightforward for first-time founders.
No, I love that. I that's what I tell people all the time. Hey, failure is best heard through a secondhand story, and it's a hell of a lot cheaper.
Yes.
If you could run alongside, if you could get mentored by somebody who's been there, or coached, whatever wording you want to use. I don't care. I just know that I don't know a better way to get to a destination than to go with someone who's already been there.
Well, I started this coaching business during COVID. I was actually working with a tech staffing company, and they had hired me to help them to build up their contracting division. And we had this coach/consultant. We went back after COVID for this leadership meeting. And I started looking at this guy's credentials, and I mean, he was great, but then I started looking at all these other coaches and consultants, and I became obsessed looking at their bios. And I'm like,
I already know the answer. I know which. I already know the end of this statement.
They're all like project. Most of them had been project managers, or not to.
They've never started a company.
They've never started a company. I'm like, how did they know? They don't know how to. They've never stayed up at night, knowing.
They've never covered a payroll. They should never coach business.
Yes. Thank you.
Until you have a payroll coming out, and you're responsible for it, don't tell me how to run a business. I'm sorry.
Well, there's so many, as there's so many parts to it that you can never, it's like being a parent. You can't explain what that's like.
No.
Until you're a mom or a dad.
No, I love it. So you get passionate about coaching. Tell me where you are with this coaching, because obviously you have the credentials to do it. So tell me where you're helping people, how you're helping them, how people can get in touch with you to get your helping. My audience, we have this podcast for three reasons. Very simple. We want to equip entrepreneurs. That's what we're doing right now with some knowledge. Okay. You know, we want to encourage them and educate them. And you have the equipping part with your coaching. So tell my audience how you can help them and what you do.
Okay. Well, I always do as I say. So while I've been doing one-on-one coaching, which has been amazing, I'm building up my own scalable business to help first-time founders. So my next step, what I'm doing now is in the vein of making things accessible to, because I've been involved in a lot of exclusive and expensive kinds of experiences. Like I was back in on staff, that was work with the other company. We were in YPO, Young Presidents Organization, which if your listeners don't know, it's basically a secretive club of very elite executives and young executives. So I've taken my latest thing that I'm so excited about is taking a concept that's used there and also in Harvard Business School that's called Forum. And I'm doing a version of that. It's basically an antidote to that. It's lonely on the top feeling that founders get. So I'm doing a group program based on that helps founders have a place to be able to share that's outside of that whole angel investor VC world where they can actually share what's going on in their mind.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like mastermind groups. I like networking with people. You're right about some of them groups. When I look at what some people are paying to be in groups like that, I'm like, you know, I appreciate it. I'm like, but wow, the ROI on that, I'm not necessarily sure. Some of them are really silly.
Yeah. And I think some of them are really good though as well. And I think it's just, what I've noticed from these last several months, because I talked to about at least three different entrepreneurs every day. And so I've been getting a lot of really valuable information on what they need. And something that comes up consistently is that peer-to-peer knowledge, or even like being able to share, like when I talk to my clients one-on-one, they're able to share that they're like, I don't know what, I just talked to this angel investor. I don't even know the words. Like, what are they even talking about? You know, so to a place where they're able to actually share and be able to say, I don't know what this is, and make it more straightforward and connect and also be heard. You know, it's lonely. I have people telling me that their spouses they can't talk to their spouses about some of this stuff. They just don't understand.
No, and I've said that. I there is no doubt. I can second that absolutely. No, I just think it's so important. My rule is this: is that and listen, I've paid really good money for really good advice, and my general rule is: have they been where you're going? If they've been where you're going, they've stood on that mountaintop. They're worth whatever it is. If you deem, in other words, everything has a price, and it's somebody's been there, done it well. I'm all for it. I paid what I said is silly money to get certain places because somebody got there. They did it well. They did it faster than I ever could have imagined. And I knew they could get me there. So I'm definitely a proponent of it, but I like where you're sharing. You're true about an entrepreneur. Sometimes it's just having someone to talk to. That sounds, people may not like, oh golly, you know, self-help group or whatever. Run a business one time and you'll need a self-help group.
Yeah. And to me, it's that like a parallel of, I do believe in mindset. I think that's super important. You and I had talked earlier on about the why, and then also the how. So that's what I believe that I bring, is that combination of actually getting into that, the personal stuff, the sort of founder therapy stuff. And then also half of my conversations with my clients are about actually how, like, how did you do this? How did you hire this person? How do you, you know, what do you do at this point? So I think it's always a combination of the why and then the strategy part of it as well.
No, I completely agree. So let me ask you this, what's the one thing when you first got started you wish you would have known that you know now?
When I first got started, I wish I would have documented everything. I wish I would have written down the story as it went. I wish I would have known that social media and all this stuff was going to be a thing.
Yeah, nothing like, you know, being able to see 20 years into the future. What is the one piece of go-to advice you give startup founders? And it may be two things, but like your go-to move when they're starting.
Oh gosh, one thing is do what makes sense. Try to avoid all of the noise. Lately, I've been talking to a lot of founders who are looking to raise money. So we break it down into like what if I always ask people, how much are you trying to raise? Okay. So maybe they'll say like $120,000 or something like that. Okay. What are your projections 5 to 10 years? $100 million. Okay. If you think that if you cannot figure out a way to monetize to your audience to bring in $100,000, how do you think you're going to build a $100 million company? So I believe in monetizing quickly. Don't go out there and think that some angel or VC is going to rescue you or be your savior. And what do you want to do? Do you want to actually run and build a company the way you want? Or do you want to be some investors, you know?
You know what? BIT. Well, no, that's what I'm I always tell people, do you understand the earlier you bring somebody on, the worse? They get more of the pie and you're going to work for them. So there is,
yes.
You know, the earlier you bring them in, you have more power as you have more proof of concept and more proof of traction. And,
I think that people tend to get caught up in doing the things they feel like they're supposed to be doing based on what other people are saying that they're doing, instead of actually doing things that are good. Just go back to the basics. You're building a business. You know, back when I started building businesses, no one said they were an entrepreneur unless they were Donald Trump.
That's a new word. Yeah.
You know, yes. You just keep it to the basics, build a business, monetize quickly. And because, you know, if you even if you are looking for an investor, if you're monetizing, you're creating a business for yourself. Don't do it for the external thing. Don't do it for what you think an investor is going to want. Do it to build a business, and you cannot go wrong, because at least at the end of the day, you'll have a business.
Yeah, no, I so agree. I don't, every single day on Instagram, I get something to the effect of, I have an idea. How do I get investors? I'm like, people don't pay for ideas. They don't pay for ideas. Ideas are a dime a dozen. They pay for they either pay for the proven execution of that idea that they know you can kind of get it into, you know, they're not just writing checks for that.
Yes. And I mean, like very, like, unless you are, I mean, you know, what?
A proven.
Clubhouse raised $100 million. Yeah. You know, like this, there are very few, there are some.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are very, very few. And, you know, you might be the next Jeff Bezos. I don't know, but it's likely that you're going to be, you know, there's a lot of other opportunities that are not.
What I always say, it's funny you say, this is what I tell them. I go, yes, you may have the next Uber. Okay. And I thank you. Great. Congratulate you. I said, but let's just do a little game so that you know how hard that's going to be. Let's start putting down pen. Let's start in Miami and drop a penny. And I want you to drop a penny from here to Seattle. I want you to mark on one of those pennies with a Sharpie and X. I want you to close your eyes and pick one of those pennies. That's your chances of having one of those ideas.
Yeah. And, you know, even like the, you know, I like to look at the kind of the more the famous versions of MVPs, minimum viable product. I mean, like Sarah Blakely cut off pantyhose to make Spanx and then just went and made it happen. And it was not easy. I love her story. I mean, Airbnb, they blew up an air mattress in their apartment to see if people would actually rent spaces in other people's homes. I mean,
proof of concept. Yeah. I mean, Sarah Blake, you know, obviously sold copying machines, Xerox. Didn't she sell? No. Yeah. Fax machines. Yeah. I mean, all I'm saying is get some proof of concept. I just think they just think they're going to get an idea and sell it. Like they're going to get millions of dollars for this idea. And I'm always like, it's got to be a little proof of concept, a little traction somewhere there. You would never get my money. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah. And there is that group, you know, there's a group of like, you know, Stanford MBAs or whatever. And they're, you know, they're startup founders. And some people, you know, which kind of like recently learned, they just are founders. And that's what they do. And they raise money. And that's how they, you know, pay their bills. And then they start up something else. And I mean, that's a thing.
Yeah.
But if that's not you, don't try. to do that.
I think people think, I guess my point is, I think people think that's the way you're supposed to do it. And I think they think it's easier than it is.
Yes.
I think that's my point. The people that are getting bankrolled, these are some pretty smart people with some pretty blue ocean, massive marketplace, massive, but you know, these are $1 billion minimum ideas.
Yes. And most of them have a specific pedigree.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm so excited. I have Diana. Is it Diane or Diana? I have it right here in front of me and I'm saying it. Is it Diana or Diane?
It's Diane. I get confused with Diana because Diana Prince is Wonder Woman's alias, if you don't know, but it is Diane Prince. I don't mind being called Diana either.
And I could have said Princess Diana, and that kind of had, I was looking backwards. Anyway, I have Diane Prince with me. She's the founder of OnStaff, grew it to 50 million, bootstrapped it 6 years, exited it to a public company. She gives people advice. She has coaching, and you need to connect with her. I mean, people, if you need help, I always tell you, find it from somebody who's done it. This person has done it. Diane, how can they connect with you and have access to you?
I'm pretty easy to find all over the internet, but my website is dianeprince.co. So that's the best way. My email is diane@dianeprince.co. I'm on LinkedIn. If you search Diane Prince, you can usually find me. You just have to get past all the Wonder Woman and Lady Di posts.
Well, it's great to have you. Again, I had Diane Prince with me to hear today. Our goal at the podcast, we want to equip, encourage, and educate entrepreneurs. Diane, thank you so much for being a guest.
Thank you, Sean.
Great. Again, audience, thank you so much. We equip, we encourage, we educate, we do it faster than any other podcast. We will talk again soon. This podcast is brought to you by Get Started Marketing. Go to getstartedmarketing.com. If you're having trouble getting traffic, systematic traffic, they're incredible. You just need to reach out to them. Again, we'll talk again soon.